George Brocklebeck with you here, 710 KNUS. It's hour three of four for us right now. We're taking just a little bit of a detour off of this red hot topic of the indictment that came down yesterday out of D.C. Against President Trump, talking about some of the troubling aspects of it. And again, I'm partially way through it, more than a third of the way through the indictment now. And I just have real concerns about this one from a provability standpoint. And when you get there, it makes it a lot easier to conclude that this has a different purpose. It just serves a different purpose. The Mar-a-Lago one I feel a little differently about. But this one, it just seems like such an origamied use of the law, given these facts. That we'll see. We'll see. I want to finish before I, you know, give you my 100% seal of approval. This is what I think about this indictment. I want to make sure I get the chance to finish reading it, and I just haven't done that yet. Now, listen, and probably he'll end up talking about this on his show as well. We have super lawyer, super host on the line right now. His name is Randy Corcoran. You hear him on these airwaves all the time. And Randy, as part of his super lawyer duties, represents Republicans, conservatives, and in this case, the Colorado Republican Party in some significant litigation that takes place in the state and federal courts throughout Colorado. And I wanted to have Randy on today, and he was so nice to give us some of his I should be out there earning money time about a lawsuit that Dave Williams, the chair of the GOP, yesterday told us about on the radio, where he said, hey, we just filed a lawsuit about the open primary that we have. And so, Randy, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, George. Good morning.
Now, listen, I have the thank you for sending me, by the way, the complaint. I'm looking at it here. What I don't want to do is give my characterization of it. Characterize for listeners what, and I think folks know the situation, which is way back in like whatever year that was, I can't remember, we opened up primaries so that no longer Republicans alone choose who our Republican standard bearers are going to be. Now unaffiliated voters get to have a say in that too. And I think folks listening to 710 largely know that part. But we've now got a lawsuit that says, hey, that's unconstitutional. Can you take us through this lawsuit that you filed?
Yeah, I think so. It's very similar to the lawsuit that we filed in 2022, February of 2022, where based on United States Supreme Court precedent, 2000 case, Democrat Party versus California, case where Republicans actually joined with the Democrats to push back on their open primary. The Supreme Court made it pretty clear that private organizations like the Democrat Party, the Republican Party, are entitled to choose how they select their candidates. And so the arguments are very much the same, violation of First Amendment freedom of association because of the primary law, same violation because of the opt-out provision, which is intentionally made an impossible standard to actually opt out of this. And then the alternatives that are given if you do opt out are very limited by the state. So we're arguing against that as well. A violation of freedom of speech. The party gets to speak in a unified voice based on the decisions that its members make. And then equal application of the laws, things that are probably boring for a radio listener. But, you know, we ran these arguments 2 years ago. It went pretty quickly. We filed in February of 22.
Where did you file? In which court?
United States District Court, Federal Court, okay. District of Colorado.
So you filed it a couple years ago, and what happened?
Yeah, we filed in February. We were in hearing on April 5th and April 6th. We had a ruling by the end of that week or the beginning of the following week, so very, very quick. Of course, there was an important primary election coming up at that time.
Yeah, big one.
And the judge, who I thought really gave us an excellent hearing, he was patient. He
Who was the judge? Yeah. Which one?
I forget his name. He's a Carter appointee.
Oh, wow.
Old guy, you know, 80 years, but in Trump years, not Biden years.
Yeah, right.
So very, very sharp. He's the name you'd know. I'm horrible names if I don't write.
That's all right. That's all right. But you thought you got a fair hearing.
Yeah, we got a fair hearing, good listening. But in his order, he was very dismissive. In fact, he was snide. I forget what he equated the members of the Republican Party, including some past and former candidates and others who were impacted by this law, to just kind of try to ride in on our silver horse to solve a problem that is actually the Colorado GOP's problem.
Oh, okay. Who did you represent in that first suit that was addressed?
Oh, gosh. We had Casper Stockham. We had Laurel Eimer. We had other – I should have gone back and looked at the specific parties. There were seven or eight or more current candidates, past candidates, and members of the Central Committee, voting members of the Colorado Republican Party. And of course, I was Republican National Committee man at the time, representing that group. But the court, in a surprisingly sort of cynical or condescending way, said that we could ride in on our horses, and said, quote, that only the Colorado Republican Party has standing to defend its rights.
Interesting.
Now, I think that's a misapplication of the law, but we chose not to appeal that at the time because it would have been too late to affect the primary last year. And we could not get the Colorado GOP to join as a party under the last administration. Dave Williams was very focused and, in fact, ran as chair in part on moving this, bringing this issue back to court and moving it forward.
And so now, and I see how the lawsuit is captioned, and I'm glad you addressed the standing issue. And folks that listen to Law Stuff may understand standing, but it's not everybody on the planet Earth can just show up into court and file a lawsuit claiming some wrong existed between two people they're not associated with. Standing is really premised on the idea that you have to have suffered some kind of an injury. In general, that's true. And in this case, this newly filed lawsuit is Colorado Republican Party, an unincorporated nonprofit association, on behalf of itself and its members. I understand the ruling from the judge on a standing issue. You guys made the decision not to appeal. We're now at this place. Are you worried at all about not having individuals named in it, or do you think it's sufficient to just say, and its members? Is it enough to just move on with this organization? Because you may not get the same judge, right?
Well, it's a good point, but that's a pretty solid ruling in the prior case that involved the exact same issues and had multiple members of the party. If a judge were to say that you need to list some individuals, I don't think that would dismiss our complaint. We could just amend it and add about 415 members of the Central Committee.
Right.
You know, 2 years ago voted unanimously to instruct the party to take this step.
Interesting. So now tell me, when you talk about the two claims, and there's actually, I know the equal protection one is part of it, and you can get into that if you'd like, but when you talk about the First Amendment piece of this thing, what is the argument that you're making? As I read through this, I see a lot of reference to, the chronology of when unaffiliated voters were allowed to vote. You reference the statute that makes it happen. And then there's one portion, I'm looking at page four here, and maybe this goes to damage, maybe there's a different answer for this, but it's paragraph 10, Randy, and it starts off as of July 2nd, 2023. But the sentence that, or the part of the sentence that caught me was, it says, it is impossible to determine the precise extent to which unaffiliated voters voting in Republican primary elections would hand, indeed have handed, the nomination to someone who did not receive a majority or even plurality of votes from Republican Party members. Does that, and I think it's a completely reasonable concession to make, but is that concession something that speaks against the injury portion of what a complaint needs to have, or is your argument something different about what that injury is?
Yeah, and in that paragraph and beyond, we cite, you know, some reporting and different things that indicate that we're accurate that that happened. But the injury, a constitutional violation in and of itself is an injury that is, sustainable in court. You have a right to bring a constitutional injury to court. And the fact that the Supreme Court, you know, now 23 years, well, the case was filed in 2000. I forget when the Supreme Court ruled on it. But for, you know, a couple of decades now, it's been Supreme Court precedent that a private organization has the right to pick and choose the way it determines who its members or its candidates are. And us not being able to do that under Proposition 108 is a constitutional violation. I think gets us past even the necessity to argue that particular harm. And I will say go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, does that then address the issue of, you're not really saying then that the 75% voting rule is in and of itself some violation of constitutional proportions. You're really trying to blow up the entire 108 and say, hey, you don't get to tell a private political organization who gets to vote in their private political organization. Is that fair? Am I making that too dumb?
No, I think that's exactly right. And then, you know, some of the sub claims address the individual unconstitutional provisions or insurmountable provisions of Prop 108.
What would have been, in your opinion, if we just focus on the voting thing? And the reason I want to do that in part, Randy, is because, as you know, there's a big meeting that's going to take place this weekend that will address something called, I think colloquially called, the Bonnywell Amendment, that addresses this issue in a way. What is a, in your opinion, constitutionally sufficient or passable standard for voting that isn't just a straight majority? Like, what could 108 have put in there where you'd have said, okay, that sucks, that's a high bar, but it's not unconstitutionally high?
Well, I think it's all unconstitutional with any bar whatsoever, because, again, a private organization gets to determine how it selects its candidates. The state doesn't get to impose that will on it. But I know the complaint got to you last night. I don't know how much in detail you got to read through it, but we do cite to Robert's Rules of Orders, which says, you know, two-thirds is an insurmountable number in most cases, that you should never set that as a standard in a meeting of a private organization, you know, that can function if only a quorum is present. And it even acknowledges that you rarely get that many people to even attend the meetings. You know, focusing on the 75%, it's not just 75% of the people that come to vote, it's 75% of the entire committee. And historically, we've rarely or almost never had 75% even show up by proxy or in person to vote.
I like the California example. Has this been tried elsewhere? I mean, are there other states that have gone down the road we've gone, and that is to force the Republican Party to take on the will of people who don't want to be part of the Republican Party as to their nominees?
Well, I heard that Wyoming did this legislatively. I didn't follow up or dig into that. We had been contacted in 2022 by Wyoming attorneys about our lawsuit and had talked with them about maybe, you know, bringing something similar up there. But I think they were able to repair this unconstitutional damage legislatively up there. I'm not personally aware at this moment of other states that have utilized Democrat Party versus California to do what we're going to do here in Colorado.
What was the response then by the state in that other case that you talked about when the Supreme Court came down and said, hey, you can't force this kind of a thing on a political party? What did they end up having to do?
Well, they've changed it into a kind of a jungle primary, and I don't know that that's been challenged at this point, but my understanding of California is it's kind of a free-for-all now.
Yeah, I don't think I want that system either. I mean, that one doesn't strike me as good.
I hear you. But, you know, you can only slay one elephant at a time.
That's right. Let me ask you the other side of this, because the defendant in this case is Jenna Griswold, not because it's Jenna Griswold. That's probably the cherry on top, just because it's the Secretary of State. She's going to end up being represented by, I presume, the Attorney General's office. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely, and that's who showed up. Young, we never saw Phil Weiser. We saw assistant AGs who were just top-notch lawyers, very professional, very collegial.
Yeah, and in large part, it's because they know where the courtroom is.
That's right. Yeah, you have to have actually been in a courtroom.
Yes, you got to know where to sit to know where to stand, you know. Having said that, what is the next thing for this? Now, we're at an interesting place on the calendar. Like, we're early, but we're not terribly early, right? Like, if this thing got pushed away for a long time, it could run into problems with precinct caucuses, assemblies, which may take on a completely different character and importance if this primary system gets upended. What's next and when?
Well, this is a complaint for declaratory judgment and injunctive relief. And because it affects an issue of such statewide importance, I imagine it will move quickly on the court's calendar. As I mentioned, in 2022, we filed in February. We were in late February. We were in court early April and had a ruling by like April 10th or something. There's no need for it to move that quickly this time around because we don't have this issue coming up until next year. But I'm quite confident that the the trial court level case will be resolved well before we get into primary impact. But then there will likely, well, there will undoubtedly be appeals by the losing side, which could also ask an upper court to stay the decision of the lower court. So this is very likely to be a long haul. But as far as an initial decision, I'd be surprised if we don't have that. What are we now, August?
Yeah.
Maybe not by the end of the year, but by early next year. And maybe much sooner, because again, as you know, the declaratory and injunctive cases move quicker than the average civil case.
Regardless of how that decision comes out, do you expect this to then be appealed further?
100%. Whoever loses. You know, again, we didn't appeal last time because the easiest thing for us was to get the party involved. And we were already going to be past the ability for there to be any impact by the 2022 case on that primary. So we've got a much better time frame now. But yeah, you'd have to assume that if the state loses, that they will appeal. And I can't, you know, I haven't asked anybody, but I would assume that if our side loses at the trial court level, we'd be appealing as well, based on that U.S. Supreme Court precedent.
One of the other attorneys on the case is John Eastman. He's in that signature block, along with another guy whose name I don't recognize, but I'm sure he's a smart dude. Any concerns at all? It looks like Eastman has conceded. He is now co-conspirator number two out of the recent indictment for Trump. Any concerns moving forward about, one, whether that poses a distraction of impact on this case, or two, whether whatever occurs in there could derail his participation in this case?
Well, certainly, as far as the distraction goes, yeah, we know exactly where the corrupt, coordinated, Democrat-controlled media machine will go in the different ways that they attack this case. If Eastman is charged criminally, that'll, as it is with Donald Trump, you know, that'll be a long process. It seems very likely to me, given where his disbarment proceedings are occurring and some of the rulings from the judge that I just thought were extraordinary, barring witnesses and experts and different things, that his license is at risk. Now, whether he'll be able to hang on to that through an appeal process, and or whether he'll be temporarily, if not disbarred, suspended during this court case is an issue. But that doesn't preclude John from participating. It just precludes him from signing documents or arguing in court. And he's got colleagues at his constitutional counsel group that are just absolutely brilliant.
I had thought yesterday when we talked with Dave, I thought it had been filed in state court. And so I had made reference to Pro Hoc Vice, but you don't even need that in federal court. I mean, I think he can probably enter his appearance on his own. He can probably get admitted to that court without anything else. A couple questions, too, if I could shift gears just a little bit, Randy. Are you going to the big meeting on Saturday, and are you a voting member of it?
Yes, because I'm Republican National Committee man, I'm on the executive committee and can vote in disputes as well as any central committee business.
Have you taken a public position on Chuck's amendment about, which is a different approach to addressing the same issue, but on Chuck's amendment that would count any absentee vote or abstaining vote as a yes?
Yeah, I actually had Dave on my show Saturday night.
Oh, you did.
And I had just, you know, I've been out of the loop for a couple of months.
I know.
But I had a chance to read this very simple amendment. I haven't talked to Chuck about it, haven't heard from him. But I was pretty compelled by Dave's arguments as to why in this unique circumstance, this 75% threshold, this might be a good move. And again, since the Republican Party is a private organization, it gets to make that decision, and we're putting it to a vote. So we'll see what people think. But I think if I have a chance to talk about it on Saturday at the meeting, that I will also argue in support of it.
Can I ask you the part, and I talked to Dave yesterday on this show, probably not as smartly as you did with him on Saturday night, but the concern that I have with that approach is that I can't think of anything else in our republic or in democratic principle that says we're going to count a voting member's non-vote, whether that's in person or by absentee, as a yes vote. And you're smarter than I am, so I'm asking you this. Is there something else like this out there, and I just don't know about it?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what triggered this idea for Chuck, because just, again, we haven't discussed it at all. Yeah. But I also don't know of any situation where a threshold has been imposed on a private organization that is so high that because you never even meet that threshold at your meeting, because you don't have 75% of the entire body there, you can never determine whether the will of the party is to actually move that opt out. So it's, you know, often you could just, if somebody didn't come and vote, you could just say, well, that's just an abstention. They're just choosing not to vote. But in this case, because you have to first meet that 75% threshold, abstaining, not showing up, is automatically treated as a no vote and gets to be counted in the sum of the 415 or so that will be making this decision. So I think it puts some pressure on folks to, hey, if you can't make it, just make sure you get your proxy to someone so your vote and your will is being heard. I think it's a unique approach to solve a very unusual and troubling problem that both political parties have been facing since Prop 108 became the law.
Yeah, I think the 75% rule sucks. I think it has the practical consequence of making it largely unchangeable, not impossible, but largely unchangeable. But my concern is we are, especially conservatives, we are a party of principle. And I don't know what the principle here we're trying to achieve is. And what I hear when I talk to Dave and I hear the argument here, we have to do this because it feels Machiavellian to me. It feels like, well, the ends justify the means. And the ends are, we want an opportunity to get out from under this open primary system. And because they've set the bar at a certain place, the things that we do that may be violative of a principle we would otherwise adhere to in every other voting setting, we're going to shelve those in order to accomplish this particular outcome. Am I crazy in saying that?
No, I certainly don't think you're crazy. I just think extraordinary situations and extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures, and no one is going to be imposing Amendment 7 on the will of the party. The party will get to vote on that issue and decide if, as a private organization is entitled to, if they want to use a different set of rules on this one particular extraordinary issue. And I don't think that's unreasonable at all.
But what about the idea, and I posed this to Dave yesterday, somebody shows up to this thing and they listen to the arguments, and I presume people have their opinions made up largely, but some people, you know, they get persuaded by the Randy Corporans that get up there and talk, or by whoever the opposition is. And they sit there and they come away and they go, you know what? I don't want to do this. I don't support this, but you know what? I also don't want to go on record and vote no. I'm going to hang on to my vote. They're in person. This is an absentee. They're in person. It sounds like this amendment would count them as a yes, even if they're there and they're saying, I do not consent to this. I do not want this. I just don't want to vote no. You would force them as a yes. Am I mischaracterizing that?
Well, let me just pull up the rule.
And thank you. I asked Julie, by the way, I'm going to talk with Chuck about this thing down the road.
Yeah.
And I wanted Julie to send me the thing because I'm like, I'm only going off of what I've read in the paper and what I've talked to Dave.
So, yes, I think you're right, because the language says the failure to submit a ballot shall be deemed for this purpose a vote in the affirmative. I think that is exactly what it would impose on that person. But the state, Prop 108, has imposed the fact that that's an automatic no vote if they abstain.
And I get your characterization, and it may have that effect, but it's not a no vote. It's set the bar at you must have 75% of the people consenting to this or affirmatively saying they want this. And so a non-vote isn't a vote against it. It just isn't counted as a vote for it. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I get why you're saying the practical sure. effect is to treat it as a no, but it's not really.
Yeah.
It's just not a yes.
Well, I don't disagree with you. There's no question about it. And the Republican Central Committee will decide if they, in this one extraordinary circumstance, want to make that exception.
You know, I'm glad that they're at least going to get to confront that thing. And I don't know what your thoughts are. I guess I should ask, you have as good a sense of the Central Committee and the party itself as anybody out there, because as the National Committee guy, I mean, you got to keep your finger on the pulse and you're all around doing stuff. Best guess right now. Before the arguments, before the vote, how do you think this thing fares?
Well, I think my view on it is probably less valid than it would be normally, just because I really have been out of the loop for a couple of months. But my initial reaction when I saw this is, man, this is coming in late. You know, there's only like a week or so to make this case.
Yeah.
You feel strongly about it. But then the flip side, when I think it through, is this might not pass on this coming Saturday, but it could certainly be brought back up and attempted again, I would think, at the next full Central Committee meeting, you know, the regularly scheduled one in September. So if it doesn't go through, I don't see any reason or any bylaw that would preclude Chuck or whomever from making a more concerted campaign between now and the September meeting.
What's the vote requirement to pass this amendment and make it legit?
A majority.
And is it a majority of those present or a majority of those in the Central Committee?
Yes, just like every other vote that the Republican Party holds.
But you got to have a quorum. I presume there's at least a quorum requirement.
What?
I presume there's at least a quorum requirement, but I get your point.
Yes. 50% plus one of there has to be a quorum present. That's right. And we never have trouble making quorum, and we should have very high turnout Saturday because of the vice chair election.
Well, Randy Corcoran, super lawyer, this is interesting. I appreciate it. I hope you'll come back on and update us. I know you will on your own show and stuff too, but I hope you'll update us on the progress of this lawsuit. And I know we're going to end up talking about what takes place on Saturday and the success of Saturdays after that. I told you privately, but I just wanted to say on the air too, man, and I don't know if you ever get tired of hearing this when you're in a man in the position that you're in, but I'm just terribly sorry for the loss of your wife, man. I just, it's so difficult to imagine anybody who had the relationship you had with your wife going through something like that. And I just want to tell you, I'm really sorry, man.
Well, I appreciate that. And I, as I've said publicly, the support of friends and colleagues and 710 was amazing. The presence at our services. I really appreciated your text the night we were watching her go. It does mean a lot. And so thank you very much. It's the hardest thing ever. And but it's awfully good to be kind of dipping my toes back in and trying to get the other aspects of my life fired up. So
Amen. Thank
you, George.
Good distraction from it too. Hey, Randy Corcoran, thanks for joining us. And tell folks when they can hear you. I even had a texter say, hey, the most recent podcast that's available is July 22nd for Randy. Can he update us on what's going on with that?
Oh, you know what? What do they call it? The scammer. This Billy would know. Had a nice text from
Skimmer,
Billy too.
The Skimmer.
The Skimmer. Skimmer. Yeah.
Yeah. That hosed me a couple weeks ago too. Yeah. I've been a victim of the Skimmer.
So I'm glad you reminded me, because all they're waiting now is for me to do a quick, you know, synopsis of the hours. So I'll try and get that done today. Tell folks to check back tonight. I'll bet they'll be up today.
Randy Corcoran, man, thanks. We'll be listening to the show. And thanks for doing what you're doing on behalf of the party. It'll be interesting to see how this thing plays out. Now, I went long with Randy for obvious reasons. Dude's a great guest, and he's right there in the middle of all these things we've been talking about. Listen, we're going to come back after taking a quick break here. When we come back, your reaction to Randy, is this lawsuit going to work, and do you agree with the argument that extraordinary times, which this has been characterized as that, require extraordinary responses, which is to do something I just can't find anywhere else in the law where we've done anything like this? 303-696-1971, and of course, I'm happy to talk about the indictment. We're going to do that as well. George Brocklin on the George Show, 710 KNUS. Brockler back with you here, 710 KNUS. My thanks to Randy Corcoran for staying so long. We took him for really almost like a segment and a half. But again, the conversation's great to have. Randy at the tip of the spear when it comes to the lawsuit that the state GOP filed this week in U.S. District Court, that's federal court, against Jenna Griswold, not because it's Jenna, but because it's the Secretary of State, and that's who you file suit on. Very interesting conversation about that. I mean, again, Randy, supremely versed in this stuff and obviously very smart and confident in the position. I'll be anxious to see how it plays out. I had not remembered that the original lawsuit that they brought, making the same arguments, was brought in the name of specific individuals, which you would think would have stronger standing. You know what I mean? You would think that the argument that my vote got watered down by someone who isn't part of my team that I freely associated with, hint, hint, wink, wink, on the First Amendment, that's my injury. But that court, that judge whose name escaped Randy, said, no, I don't think you have standing. So it's not a substantive opinion. It was kicked out on standing. So this time they've come back with the state party. And again, I'm not a wicked smart guy on this, but I do have concerns that absent that plus specific individuals could potentially open them up, especially in front of another judge who isn't bound by that other judge's ruling about the individuals, might say, I don't think that the party has standing. I think they probably do. I think they probably do. But I would have thrown in some individuals' names there, too, just to make it harder for them to get rid of. But Randy's point is, look, if they do that, we're just going to amend the complaint. It's really not that big a deal. The other part is in terms of characterizing the injury. I'm glad Randy said this. I brought up the fact that within the complaint, they admit we can't even tell you to what extent or whether or not unaffiliated participation changed the outcome that we would have had otherwise. We can't know that because the voting's anonymous and we like it that way. We want it to be that way. We don't want the man to know how we're voting because you know where that goes. But he said, not a big deal. And it's not a big deal because any injury or any claim of an injury under a constitutional right is sufficient to be an injury that would survive something called, in my, I'm going to tell you, 12B6 or a summary judgment motion, which I think is probably going to happen at some point, too. Interesting that the attorneys general are the ones that are defending this. Not, that's not the interesting part. That has to happen by law. But that Phil's nowhere to be seen on this thing. And I just, listen, maybe it's just the different approach we had to leading an organization. I mean, this dude's running around the state of Colorado running for governor already. I think we all know that. No one's going to be shocked when he tries to convert his attorney general fundraising into gubernatorial fundraising. No one's going to be shocked by that. But I just took a different approach as the DA. And if there was a big consequential case, especially one that had some risk involved to it for the jurisdiction, I put myself on the case. It's just, it's what Kellner does. It's what Michael Allen does down there. It's just what a real prosecutor does. And in this case, dude's nowhere to be found. I mean, even if you send your specialists into court on your behalf, how do you not at least show up to court and sit down in the back bench or nearby enough to pass them a note that says something like, where's the bathroom in this building or something like that? I mean, where's that? Nonetheless, we're going to keep tabs on Randy. Not a ton of things to update you on that. The other part of this, though, and I really appreciated Randy sticking around for this, is this big vote on Saturday, this Amendment 7, known as the Bonnie-Well Amendment, that's going to upend the way that we count votes in a way that I think even Randy, and it's not like Randy said, hey, I went out there and researched the hell out of this, but Randy conceded, I've never heard of this either. I've never heard in America or in Colorado of a voting scheme that counts your vote as a yes, even if you say, even if you're physically there and say, I don't consent to this, but I'm not voting again. I've never seen that. Now, again, Chuck's smarter than I am, too, and he's probably got some cases of it existing out there. But that's an interesting thing. I don't think it passes. If it does, it really does alter the landscape moving forward. If this amendment passes and then they get to have a vote about whether or not to withdraw from the primary, that would drastically change the landscape for 2024 for Republican candidates in the state of Colorado. I don't think we get there, but what do I know? I'm just me, the chucklehead. Now, listen, I want to get back to this indictment, this huge, historic, seemingly political. It feels political to me only because it's very difficult for me to wrap my mind around the allegations here as they apply to the laws in this case. Jack Smith, of course, the special prosecutor who has been appointed by Attorney General Merrick Garland to get Trump. That's the only conclusion you can come up with, to get Trump. He filed, in my opinion, a very conservative, tactically proficient, smart lawsuit charges against him in Miami on the Mar-a-Lago stuff. For those people that are like, it's declassified, it has nothing to do with classification. All right, let that part go. I think he was wicked smart in the way that he approached that case. And I think that President Trump is in real trouble on that case. This one, it's harder for me to conceptualize what's going on here, because it sounds like the bulk of this is Trump kept saying that the election was stolen, even though everybody in his universe, and it's not everybody, but all of these people that he put in place, told him that that wasn't true. And so he continued to advance this lie. We have spent a great deal of time talking about whether or not this guy's going to be in a position to prove that he actually believed that he lost the election when he was out there saying that he didn't, or that he believed that the election was valid and had integrity, even though he was out there in public saying that it wasn't, and encouraging people in his sphere, co-conspirators 1 through 6, including Giuliani, Eastman, who's on this state lawsuit by the GOP, and crazy Sidney Powell, amongst others, that he encouraged them through this false belief to take steps that would otherwise be criminal. It's concerning to me. I mean, listen, I'll read you one of the sections that are referenced as part of this indictment. And this is cited by the grand jury through this indictment. 18 U.S. Code, Section 241 is called conspiracy against rights. This is what it reads. If two or more persons conspire to injure, oppress, threaten, or intimidate any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege secured to him by the Constitution or laws of the United States, or because of his having so exercised the same, or, and then there's other stuff that doesn't really apply. It involves like disguise on the highway or blah, 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 blah. It doesn't matter. That's the language that applies here. Well, okay, if two or more person conspire, I got that. That's the conversations that took place between Trump and conspirators 1 through 6. I understand that. To injure, to injure a person in the free exercise and or enjoyment of any right secured to him by the Constitution or laws of the United States. I don't know. What's the injury? The other one is oppress. Well, it can't be oppress in that the vote is already taken. He wasn't keeping people from voting.
This was, I know the injury. Exactly.
1 second. Let me read these other two, yeah, and then I'll get you, Bill. The other one is threaten. I don't think he threatened anyone in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right. And I don't think he intimidated any person in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right. It feels like we're left with injure. What's injure?
Injure is the fact that your vote doesn't count anymore. That's
why,
what he
why
was
doesn't
doing.
The vote count?
Because he was moving towards a scheme that would invalidate the people that voted for his opponent. That the results of the actual election didn't matter. That's the injury. The injury is inside of our Constitution itself and the basic premise of how we set out America. One vote, one person. He has decided, nope, sorry, don't believe that anymore. We're not going to do that one. We're going to do something else. And we're going to do it based on this plan here. That's the injury. The injury is that he decided to disenfranchise a large segment of the population and say that the way that we have always in the past elected our president no longer matters. Now I get to pick. That's the injury.
Well, if that is the end result of these conversations, that it was, because I can foresee a universe where the arguments being advanced by the defense would be, whoa, 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 I'm trying to get us to a place where the legitimate votes that were legitimately cast were counted. And in many ways, I'm not trying to injure anyone's voting. I'm trying to bring integrity and enforce the actual votes that were cast. I mean, I could see that argument. We should talk about more of that. I just, once again, I've run us up against a break because I'm crack smoke crazy here and I don't pay attention to the clock. Let's cut away for a break. When we come back, it'll be you, me. The calls, 303-696-1971. The texts that are coming in as well. Is your understanding of this indictment one where this is just purely political, or is there legitimacy to this? Is there something the president did wrong that should be converted into a criminal conviction? Or is it enough that we had the January 6th hearings? Many of the things that are alleged here, I don't disagree with them. It's just, does it sufficiently lay out a violation of federal law? And I'm very dubious about that at this point. George Brockler on the George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here, 710 KNUS, rapidly approaching the end of that third of 4 hours. Want to tell you about Dan Kaplan. We've been talking law all day long. We've been talking Jack Smith, Randy Corcoran, John Eastman, and a whole bunch of the application of the law stuff. And if you are looking for someone who won Ethics Beyond Reproach, I don't know that there's ever even been a claim against this guy, let alone something substantiated. If you're looking for someone who is just ethical but a hard-charging fighter on your behalf, you want Dan Kaplis. I listened to Dan last night right when this thing broke, this indictment break, and he started to do a little bit of analysis here as I was bouncing back and forth across the spectrum. Guy's just wicked smart. He just sees things in there that other folks don't, and that's what makes him not only a unique and special attorney, but one who is better and more successful against his opponents, who tend to be those giant insurance companies that are trying to keep you, especially if you've been injured, from getting any sort of reasonable justice out of the court system. Dan doesn't go for reasonable justice. Dan goes for all the justice you deserve. And that's why he and Bobber Wahid have been killing it for so many years. Dan for decades, Bobber he's in his second decade, which is crazy to say out loud because I think I remember him when he was an attorney that had a paper route. I'm kidding. He they've been doing great stuff. Here's what you do. Call him on the phone at 303-696. Oh, nope, that's us. Call him at 303-770-5551. 303-770-5551. And only because I screwed it up, 303-770-5551. Or check him out at DanKaplisLaw.com. That's Dan Kaplis, C-A-P-L-I-S, law.com. Some texts that have come in. We've got Diane on the line. I promise you, Brian, the others that called in before, call back in. Now let's have this conversation. Here's some texts. Well, George, after what you said, I think we must go after Chuck Schumer and Maxine Waters for their statements. There's something from our friend Eric. George, if Smith really had a case down in Florida, why would he want to change the venue to D.C.? And since January 6th committee ended, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about venue there. And we'll talk about some other things, too. Big questions about timing as well. Stick around. 303-696-1971. Join us. It's me, George Brockler, on The George Show, 710 KNUS.